absolutely mystifies me why the Abbott Turnbull government wants to cut $200 million from schools in this area.
Welcome to this week's edition of Eye on the Peninsula, this Tuesday the 31st of May, with Deputy Opposition Leader and Shadow Foreign Affairs Minister Tanya Plibersek opening our program with cuts the Liberal government is making to local schools. We'll hear more from the Shadow Minister shortly. Good afternoon, I'm Piers Cunningham, broadcasting from the RPPFM studios in Mornington. Again, Eye on the Peninsula focuses on the upcoming election. Politicians and candidates are visiting Frankston and the Mornington Peninsula, selling their vote to individuals and communities with pre-election promises and handshakes. We've got a full program, with Treasurer Scott Morrison's comments on the $20 billion the Senate is holding back in the budget. The Honourable Tanya Plibersek and ALB candidate for Dunkley, Peter Murphy, out and about at local schools talking up education and the dairy farming crisis. But first, more news was announced late last week in the Dunkley seat. Another pre-election promise the coalition government announced last week includes a total of $5.9 million to be shared amongst local football, netball and athletic clubs. A crowd of local sporting officials, committee members, mums and dads, young sporting enthusiasts and Frankston City and Mornington Peninsula mayors gathered at the Seaford Football Netball Club Oval for the big announcement delivered by Treasurer Scott Morrison and Liberal candidate for Dunkley, Chris Crowther. Mr Morrison welcomed the crowd before announcing the pre-election promise.
Well, it's great to be here on the peninsula. It's great to be here with Chris Crowther, our candidate, Liberal candidate for Dunkley. And I also want to acknowledge Bruce Bilson, my good mate and the former member for Dunkley. And it's great to see the baton being passed on to Chris. And I know he's going to do a tremendous job. And I'm very pleased to be here as the Treasurer to be able to really support and endorse what Chris is doing here and to make a number of announcements, which I know you're particularly keen on. Can I also thank all of the mums and dads and the coaches and the club presidents and the officials and everyone who was here today, because as we're just talking to with the kids here, that's what makes a club. It is a community club, and it needs the volunteers, it needs the passion that we see from parents and those working in the canteen, those putting out the posts and all these sorts of things every week. And it's a life's work, and it's a passion too that I know people really appreciate and really enjoy. But the life lessons that you get in sport, I think, are fabulous. And the mentoring you get of young people through coaches and parents and others is tremendous. And so that's why we're pleased to announce today a total package of some $5.9 million for Peninsula Sports. That comprises $2 million towards women's sports here, $1.6 million towards Peninsula Playing Fields package, $300,000 for the Frankston Dolphins Junior Football Club for lighting, and $2 million to build a new purpose-built Mornington Athletics facility, which we had announced previously. Now, this $5.9 million is not just an investment in sport, it's an investment in community and the wonderful work that is done in community. I particularly am pleased to be announcing that $2 million for women's sport here. It's great to see the take-up in new codes of young girls through to female players right across the board, whether it's happening in football, of course we're talking about netball or an AFL or in any of these areas. The ability for people right across the community to get engaged in local sport, keep fit and active lifestyle, but most importantly to engage in community, is what this $5.9 million is all about. Chris.
Thank you very much, everyone here, for being here today. Sport, as Scott Morrison, the Treasurer of Australia, has said, it's very important for our community. It's very important for our young people, not only from just a sporting perspective, from an educational perspective, a health perspective, a confidence perspective as well. And I'm very pleased to have very closely with both Scott and Greg Hunt, as well as the former member, Bruce Bilson, to deliver a package of $5.9 million for Peninsula Sports. It's at the discretion of each of those clubs to utilise that as they wish. And that's a very important thing to grow women's sport and to help that grow. And I know the clubs will be able to utilise that money well, whether they use it individually for their clubs or they pull that money together.
Yeah, great announcement.
Lastly, I just want to thank all the clubs and all the parents and supporters and the kids who have come out here today. And also thank you to James Dooley, the Mayor of Frankston City Council.
Chris.
As well as Graham Pitcock, the Mayor of Mornington Shire Council, who have advocated very strongly for sports right across the peninsula and in Frankston. So thank you very much, everyone, for your support here today.
Thank you. Thank you.
Seaford Football Netball Club President Dale O'Neill was very pleased with the injection of funds to help raise the profile and status of the club.
Promised $300,000, so which obviously would be very beneficial for our club to the fact that it's there to promote women's in sport, and which we have over 120 athletes involved at our football netball club. So in which way are we going to use that to get most benefit out of it? I guess time will tell, but we'll put our brains trust together, and it's obviously pretty exciting to have a for that sort of cash injection. So
was it a bit of a shock? Did you get any wind of it before?
I got a call last night to say they were coming down to the facilities today, so yeah, in regards to that, lead up to that, we've been working hard for it, because obviously our club's grown so dramatically in the last few years. So yeah, we'll hopefully we would be able to get some sort of incentive. So yeah, it's a great start.
Another local club in line to benefit from the re-election commitment is Mount Martha Soccer Club. President of the club, David Huggett, said,
"The commitment is $1 million to help establish playing fields, basically in principle soccer fields and a hockey pitch for Mount Martha."
Now, how many players do you have there at the moment, right across the board?
Yeah, we've grown quite significantly. So it's our second year this year, and we've gone from 275 members to 400, which is obviously quite significant growth within 1 year. We've now got 27 sort of mixed teams, six all-girl teams, and we've just started our All Abilities, which is the teams for kids with physical and intellectual disabilities.
There has been a growth spurt in the sport. Why is that?
One, it appeals to all. Definitely, I guess one of the things, you know, we guess we're quite inclusive. You know, boys, girls, you know, kids with disabilities as well. I think the sport, particularly after every Soccer World Cup, does see significant growth. And I think there's obviously a lot of influence on lots of Europeans being over in Australia. And I guess the passion for the sport has seen a lot of growth.
What are you going to do with the money?
Well, the investment is for the playing pitches. And we'll continue to work with the council on then building a clubhouse and, you know, the land. So it's part of, a broader piece of work we're doing. But, we really look forward to having sort of three full-size pitches down in Mount Martha for the kids and seniors to enjoy and participate in the sport.
Many sporting clubs and venues across the peninsula will benefit from the re-election announcement, particularly women's sports. And this from the Treasurer when asked about the Senate blocking $20 billion of budget savings. Will the new voting changes in the Senate give the government the numbers to pass this, and is the government confident they will?
Well, we're putting this budget directly to the Australian people, and that's the first time that has happened, at least in living memory. And so the new Senate, if we're re-elected, will know that all of the policies that we've been seeking to progress as part of this last Parliament have been put directly to the Australian people. And so there'll be no leave pass for saying these things haven't been tested with the Australian people if we're successful. Now, equally, the changes to the voting system in the Senate means the end of preference whisperers and people getting elected on a handful of votes. And those who are elected, I think, will be in a different position to those who have gone before them, and they'll have a different understanding, I think, a sense of the need to, I think, deal responsibly with the legislation for which the government has sought a direct mandate.
Do you think it's a fair system now, the new voting system for the Senate?
Yes, very, very fair. I mean, the previous system, frankly, was not only outdated, but frankly absurd.
Deborah Maher reporting. Ahead, the dairy farm crisis. But first we'll hear from the Deputy Opposition Leader and ALP candidate for Dunkley.
Across the Mornington Peninsula, 98.7, 98.3, RPPFM.
You'd be right thinking that politicians are here spruiking their promises if we vote for them come election day. Deputy Opposition Leader and Shadow Foreign Affairs Minister Tanya Plibersek and ALP candidate for Dunkley, Peter Murphy, were seen out and about late last week. They both visited Benton Junior College in Mornington. Both politicians had this to say to Deborah Maher.
It's a real pleasure to be here with Peter Murphy, our candidate for Dunkley. She's an absolutely outstanding candidate in a seat that we've got very high hopes of winning. Peter is someone who has had a distinguished career in the law. She's practiced the law in a way that was really designed to help other people working for legal aid and working in legal policy formulation. But it's not just her professional life that impresses people. It's her involvement in community organisations, sports. And I also have to say this, Peter, because it's not a secret, but the fact that her huge tenacity meant that she beat breast cancer, that she's fought a very hard fight against that, and she's not just beaten it herself, but has been such a strong advocate for better treatment for other people who are suffering from breast cancer too. It's wonderful to be here at this fantastic school. I think Peter will say a few words in a moment about the school and other schools locally, but I want to start by saying, you know, really, you look at a school like this and the marvellous job that they're doing educating the next generation of young Australians, and it absolutely mystifies me why the Abbott Turnbull government wants to cut $200 million from schools in this area. The difference between the Abbott Turnbull cuts to education and Labor's extra needs-based funding for this area alone would be an additional $24 million over the next 2 years. I don't know how any member of parliament or any political representative can campaign in this area on a promise that they will cut $24 million of school funding over the next 2 years, or $200 million over the next 10 years from young people in this area. And it is really a real difference in the values between Labor and the Coalition. You know, the Coalition, their big promise is a $50 billion tax cut for big business and a $19 billion tax cut for the richest people on $180,000 a year or more. Our big promise is to invest in health, in education, and in good quality jobs for Australians. I think it tells you everything you need to know about Malcolm Turnbull, that he's happy to spend money on a tax cut. He's happy to spend your money, just not on you. He wants to give a tax cut to big business rather than invest in schools and health and the services that Australians rely on.
Yeah, I just like to thank Tanya very much for being here. She's obviously a leading light in the parliament and in the party. It's terrific to have been invited to be here by the principal and vice principal of Benton Junior College. The school leaders gave us a fantastic tour. They are rightly proud of this school, but this is a school that under the cuts by the Abbott Turnbull government will lose up to $600,000 a year. That is money that is spent on special needs, on programs, and on making sure that the kids of this area in Mornington get a great education. Mornington Primary School, the cuts up to $300,000 a year. Mornington Park Primary School, $200,000 a year. Mornington Secondary College, up to $1.5 million a year. And the special school here in Mornington, up to $200,000 a year if the Turnbull government gets re-elected because of the Abbott Turnbull cuts. That is a core issue in this election. The difference between a shortened Labor government and having people like Tanya Plibersek and myself, if I got elected to Dunkley, fighting for the needs of all of the kids in this electorate, but the kids in Mornington, so that they can get the education they deserve. And make no mistake about it, I'll be campaigning on this between now and the end of the election, because the choice is clear. We can have good quality schools, we can have Medicare that's about your Medicare card and not your credit card, and we can have the provision of health, or we can have $50 billion worth of tax cuts for big businesses and the top end of town. We choose to invest in people.
Shadow Treasurer Chris Bowen said families will be better off under a Labor government, but we will not be able to afford to bring back the school kids bonus. Is this Labor's answer to the budget repair?
Well, we announced $70 billion of improvements to the budget bottom line in Bill Shorten's budget reply speech, including by not proceeding with the $50 billion of tax cuts for the big end of town and by not proceeding with the tax cuts for people on $180,000 a year or more, and including by tightening up on the some of the very dodgy vocational education providers. So we have made clear tens of billions of dollars of improvements to the budget bottom line. We wouldn't proceed with an expensive and divisive plebiscite. We wouldn't continue the government's useless but expensive climate change policies. We wouldn't proceed with a baby bonus mark too. And so we've outlined a number of ways in which we would improve the budget bottom line. But unfortunately, no matter how hard we fought against the school kids bonus being cut, we cannot afford to repair all of the damage of the Abbott Turnbull cuts overnight. Families will be better off under Labor. For a start, we'll be investing in schools, including in schools in this area, by more than an extra $200 million over the next 10 years. $24 million over the next 2 years alone. But it's not just school education. It's protecting families from $100,000 university degrees. It's making sure that your Medicare card matters more than your credit card when you go and see the doctor. Protecting people against higher fees when they go and see doctors who can no longer afford to bulk bill their patients. Protecting families against higher costs for medicines. So we've laid out very comprehensively our priorities. Our priorities are investing in health, in education, and in jobs. The government's priority is a $50 billion tax cut for the biggest businesses in Australia.
Peter had this to say about Liberals suggesting they will cut Gonski in 4 years.
Labor, and me personally, is absolutely committed to needs-based funding for schools and to continuing on Gonski. There is no doubt that the schools across Dunkley and these schools in Mornington, including Benton Junior College that we're visiting today, will have huge losses under Turnbull's refusal to fund Gonski. He's walked away from Gonski, and if he had his way, he'd walk away from these public schools. These children deserve better, and that's what we'll give them.
And Ms. Plibersek's response to Leader of the National Party, Barnaby Joyce's comments on the Indonesian government.
Well, I think it is extraordinary that the man who is Deputy Prime Minister of Australia is accusing the Indonesian government of being in collusion with people smugglers. Now, in terms of a gaffe, this is on par with former Prime Minister Tony Abbott reminding Indonesians of Australia's aid support after Indonesians suffered one of the worst natural disasters in recent years with the Boxing Day tsunami. It is extraordinarily insulting, and what mystifies me is that Mr. Joyce has not gone out just to apologise, to correct the record and to apologise for this gaffe. And it is extraordinary too that it seems Prime Minister Turnbull wants to cover up the gaffe, explain it away, say that the relationship with Indonesia is still good. We've now got a former Indonesian foreign minister, as well as many others in Australia and in Indonesia, saying that these sorts of comments are unacceptable and not right. It's about time that Mr. Joyce apologised.
I think Bishop was trying to do that this morning.
It's not actually for Julie Bishop to apologise on Barnaby Joyce's behalf. It's for Barnaby Joyce to apologise. He's the one who made the silly statement. Do Australians really want this man as Deputy Prime Minister?
Deborah chats to four students who proudly show off their school to their very important visitors.
It was nice to show someone our awesome school because it's good to have someone to talk to about it.
We learn Japanese at our school, and we have after-school programs like maths programs and science programs. And the Year Sixes just did a winter summer lightning premiership, and we all played a sport and we competed against other schools.
It was nice to show people a good a awesome school and see what they thought about it.
I was a little nervous at first, and then I met them all and they were all really nice, and then it was fun.
Polls reflect a tight contest between Liberal and the ALP candidates in Dunkley. Deborah will have more on the politicians' movements as they go head-to-head in the upcoming election. Shortly on the program, results from the International Cool Climate Wine Show held in Mornington last week and the Scarlet Cup MS fundraiser. But now, the farmers. Australian dairy farmers are struggling with low milk prices. Their livelihood is threatened. They feel vulnerable under the current system, with many of them facing unprecedented debt and extra costs to keep their farms productive. There is great uncertainty. Blue Bay cheesemaker and owner Andre sources milk from Gippsland and Main Ridge. Deborah asked him if the dairy industry crisis will affect his cheese business.
We pay farm gate direct price basically, so we don't get involved in the politics out there, what's happening with the milk prices and so on, just because we've got consistent product, consistent supply, and we look after our suppliers, which are farmers, because we do buy milk at the farm gate. So we are in control of our own destiny, basically, what we're producing, what we sell to the public, and then the farmer gets rewarded and gets this dollar for the milk they supply. So it doesn't affect us, and it doesn't affect the farmers attached to us, basically.
As a partisan approach, the government has provided $500 million to dairy farmers in the form of cheaper loans and welfare payments. Is the government's handout enough to help the farmers?
It should be somehow subsidized and controlled by government. And that's what the whole Europe is doing, supporting and subsidizing their farms. One of the countries in the world, but I'd say developed country, civilized country like Australia, wouldn't have subsidies for the farmers.
So do you feel for the farmers at the moment then?
I do. And it's they're in a big situation where they put their families into a great risk of losing everything and having all this cash flow problems and issues, obviously with their bank accounts as well, having such a low price for the milk. So I believe it's got to be really looked into. And if a government can support and fix this issue on that level and support farmers more, it will be much better for everybody. Everyone will benefit. We're still going to drink and have enough fresh, good milk. And that's what we want. We don't want farmers to go out of business because it's going to ruin the entire dairy situation in Australia. And not having enough raw material, which is milk, going to impact a lot on producers too. So once the farms shut down, it's not that easy to go back into it and open them up again and make them viable and feasible and sustainable in the business. So I believe it's a very serious situation, got to be looked into.
Andre's last words is advice to consumers.
My belief is support local. Make sure you buy local produce, you buy as much basically local produce if you can, and pay the price, because it's pointless to expect something very cheap and at low price which costs you money to produce. So it's really unfair, and at times consumer actually creates this movement. And if we all as a consumers supporting this movement and happy and prepared to pay extra for this product, which costs you money to produce these days, and we're not just talking cows eating grass so it's cheap to produce, it's not the case. We're talking about a lot of work involved into producing milk these days, and labor and so on and so on, and the maintenance of equipment and tractors and milking machines, maintaining the farm, and the whole package got to be looked into. And I believe that if you all support local farms and local producers, this situation will change. The farmers can't be dictated the price.
Do the right thing and pay the fair price for this quality Australian product. Back with more from Blue Bay Cheese, then Junior Football and the Quit Challenge. The Treasurer and Chris Crowther visited Blue Bay Cheese in Mornington to hear a success story under the Foreign Affairs Minister's current free trade agreement. After Andre and his family migrated from Ukraine, they started up Blue Bay Cheese over a decade ago. Christine, Andre's sister-in-law, had this to say about Ukraine and Australia's commercial relations.
Built a business. Most people that work here are new Australians, and we're giving back to the economy, and we're giving back to the people. And we're using local produce, and we're using local milk.
What's fantastic. What's a great success story.
And that report compiled by Deborah Maher. Coming up, the Cool Climate Wine Show results, but first. It's a disgusting habit, says Quit Victoria, and today is World No Tobacco Day. Last Sunday, the MP JFL Junior Football League, in partnership with Quit Victoria, Peninsula Health and Good Sports, played 65 footy games across the peninsula for the Quit Challenge. We'll hear representatives from those organisations speak about the Quit Challenge, but first, this is what Dr. White had to say about smoking and young adults.
We know that children are absolutely influenced by the people around them that they see as role models. Even those who claim that they're rebelling, they're still looking to the adults around them for role modelling. So if we have some kids who are 15 and under, it's exactly the time when we should be role modelling that smoking just isn't part of normal Australian culture anymore, and it isn't something that they should be aspiring to do. We do know that in the peninsula, it's slightly higher than state average. If we can stop kids taking up smoking through denormalisation and not seeing people smoke around them and price measures, we can really make a big difference to the smoking prevalence on the peninsula in a very short period of time.
Has the age dropped for trying smoking?
The really good news is those who do take up smoking, fewer of them are taking it up, and they're taking it up much later. And in fact, where it used to be 13 or 14 year olds, now it's 16 or 17 year olds. The latest data released across Australia is we have something like a 2/3 of 16 and 17 year olds have never even tried a cigarette.
The quit challenge, do you have any measures in place to see if it's actually successful?
We don't have any measures in place to see if this sponsorship is successful. I think it's really an awareness-raising issue, and what we've seen with the challenge has been a really wonderful collaboration where you see something like Peninsula Health working at grassroots level as well with Quit as an NGO and the Junior Football League down there. It's a really terrific collaboration.
Health promotion practitioner from Peninsula Health, Andy Murphy, president of the MPJFL Junior Football League and the regional manager for the Good Sports Program, attended the day advising.
1st of April in 2014, the legislation came in where there was a 10-metre rule, no smoking at any underage or under 18s training or sporting events. And so the league has taken the next step to go smoke-free completely, which means there is now no smoking at any ground within the league. So that's 15 clubs within the league. So smoking rates are significantly higher than the Victorian average in many parts of the Mornington Peninsula, and death rates from lung cancer are also higher than the Victorian average. Victorian rates of smoking are 13%, and Frankston and Mornington Peninsula region rates are between 21 and 30%. This is about getting a message across to prevent our youth from uptake of smoking and to hopefully support those that do smoke to quit so that we send the right message to the kids, because secondhand smoke is also damaging. We've come on board because we want to support the Mornington Peninsula Junior Football League. It's a priority in our catchment for tobacco control. Good Sports and Peninsula Health work in conjunction together with that. So to support the league is a really big achievement. And this initiative is probably one of the first that we believe of throughout any league in Victoria. And so we're just hoping that other leagues will follow.
So I'm the league president. I'm Andrew Suter. If we looked at Mount Martha and Mount Eliza at the first stage down the track, they were looking at putting this forward, and we thought as an opportunity the league should get on board right across every age group and every team and every club. The big thing I see for the reason we're doing this is it's providing a healthy and safe environment for the kids to play footy and the spectators to watch footy instead of sucking in secondhand smoke. And if we teach the kids not to smoke and the reasons why not to smoke, what it causes them, it's going to hopefully stop kids taking up smoking, and it'll cut the rate of all these illnesses. And so today there's actually 65 games being played, and at every game there's going to be a best player awarded from the umpires from either side. So there'll be a certificate given, and it'll help promote the World No Tobacco Day and the Quit Challenge that's going on.
How many people are you expected to come through today?
Well, in excess of maybe 4,000 or 5,000 people.
And we'll be witnessing. How are those egg and bacon balls going on over there?
I think you saw me have one before. It's actually quite nice, but the gluten-free bread wasn't all that good.
My name's Bill Karamedos, and I'm the regional manager for the Good Sports Program. So the Good Sports Program is a free program helping sporting clubs manage alcohol responsibly. However, a component of that is helping sporting clubs understand their requirements regarding the smoking laws. The league, in conjunction with Peninsula Health, came to ask for help about doing this, and we believe it's a great initiative in helping sporting clubs go beyond what the law states and become completely smoke-free. So hopefully from this, a lot of leagues follow their lead, and more leagues do it around the state. Yeah, so in conjunction with this, the league has decided that all 15 junior sporting clubs become Good Sports, and as of last week all 15 are. In conjunction with that, they're doing the junior pilot, which means that they're together with understanding the smoke laws, the alcohol laws, they're also going to implement some healthy eating options together with implementing some policies about spectator and parent behaviour.
Is member for Flinders, Mr Greg Hunt, offering to help out Blue Scope's reserves needs?
We've asked Greg Hunt for some assistance, and there's a good, I think it's a good sports program or a program to help out sporting clubs, and we've applied for a grant with Greg Hunt, and hopefully in the future we might be lucky enough to receive some help from Greg Hunt in those areas.
How much have you asked for?
For what? We've asked to help finish here. We've asked for, say, around $5,000 to $6,000, and hopefully we'll get somewhere around that vicinity.
What's that going to do?
It's going to complete the irrigation system here at Bluescope out onto the actual oval, and that'll complete the whole setup, and we won't have to come here and manually water the ground every day.
What about lighting?
We've got other sponsors trying to come on board. We've just paid for our lighting towers, and we've got to hopefully have a major sponsor come up and speak to me later on today that we've been trying to work with, so fingers crossed that goes well.
What about a grandstand, and what about club rooms?
Rome wasn't built in a day, and I think the league is so lucky to have its own sporting facility and sporting ground to allow our kids and our clubs to use this facility whenever they want, so we'll maybe hold back for a few years for the grandstand.
And lastly, let's hear from a couple of Crib Point under-15s players who know what smoking does to your health.
Because it affects your health, and you're not as fit as you would be when you're not smoking.
Yeah, it's the same thing health-wise, because with smoking it affects your lungs, and that can affect you playing and just everyone around. Yeah.
It's not only about footballers and athletes stop smoking, but it can also be for parents.
Yeah, it can, because then that's a reflection on their kids and how what they think is right and what they think is wrong.
And secondhand smoke is no good too, is it?
Yeah, secondhand smoking, that you still affect your lungs as if you were smoking yourself, so it's still bad if the parents smoke around their kids as well.
And who are you playing for today?
Crib Point.
What's your position?
Forward line.
You nervous?
Not really.
You going to win?
Yeah.
Bet.
Yeah, Crib Point, and I play back flank or back pocket.
And where are you on the ladder at the moment?
Oh, I don't know. I think somewhere near the bottom, probably. I don't know.
Good luck.
If you want to set a good example to kids and kick your smoking habit, call the Quit line on 137848 or visit quit.org.au. Now for the International Cool Climate Wine Show results, followed by our last story on the program, the Scarlet Cup MS fundraiser.
This is 98.7, 98.3 RPPFM.
Corks were popping at the International Cool Climate Wine Show public tasting at the Mornington Racing Club last week. Masters of wine, sommeliers and novice drinkers were drawn to this annual event to taste and judge some 400 wine entries. Deborah Maher caught up with events manager James Baldwin while doing the rounds. He had this to say.
So we were brought on board late last year to help manage and plan the event. So it's been running since the year 2000, which is fantastic. It's a very long-standing, really important and integral part of the wine community on the Mornington Peninsula, but also in Australia. So it's really focusing on cool climate wine as something that is a little bit different, something that is so applicable and local for not only Mornington Peninsulaites but also Melbourneites, that it's just so exciting for us to be able to show different varietals as well as the big varietals for us, which is Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, and really highlight the unique differences, the characteristics, and how really terroir plays a massive part in all of this. And that's looking at how specific little eco-climates within the vineyards themselves can affect the way that the wine tastes in a big way in the long run. And that's just such an exciting place to be from a wine show point of view.
Which countries are represented at the International Cool Climate Wine Show?
Not only do we have Mornington Peninsula entries and a significant number of those, we've got some wonderful entrants from New Zealand, specifically Hawke's Bay, Marlborough. We've got fantastic entrants from Tamar Valley, down in Tassie, from Orange as well in New South Wales, from Adelaide Hills and other cool climate regions in Adelaide and the great southern region, Denmark and WA as well. But we've also got some fantastic entrants from the north of Italy and from the south, and some really fantastic guys in Europe too.
Why are peninsula varietals so highly rated and regarded on the world stage?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think it's really interesting because looking at commercially, the Mornington Peninsula is not even a blimp on the radar for the history of wine. So 1989 is when the first proper commercial vineyards were operating down here, places like Mainridge Estate and Red Hill Estate. And since then, it has really sort of grown and grown and grown. So I think it's really important to note that because of our lack of history, we don't really suffer from bounds that restrict us to winemaking history and tradition that other regions in the world have got. And because of that, we've been able to really sort of pioneer different varietals down here and different clones of varietals. And looking at Pinot Noir and Chardonnay especially, we are the only maritime cool climate region in Australia. And to be able to be that and to have these really unique characteristics of being surrounded by three bodies of water, to have the fantastic Bass Strait winds that come on shore and cool vineyards right down, and for us to really not suffer from frost, just turns out these really interesting, different and unique flavour characteristics from the fruit itself. Some vineyards are really inspired by Burgundy, but some vineyards just go out and do their own thing. On a world stage point of view, you'll find that a lot of the Pinot Noir that we produce down here will appear in Qantas First Class, will appear in American Airlines First Class, that will be in London restaurants, New York restaurants, restaurants in Italy, and it's just something that is really, really quite stunning to think that from a wine region that doesn't have a lot of history really has put a lot behind its people from a wine community point of view. And I think that sense of community and that essence of community is also really exciting for us too. And other people just appreciate that. They love what we do. They love that the International Cool Climate Wine Show brings so many Mornington Peninsula entries, but also international entries too, to the attention of everyone.
Paul White, one of the judges at the Cool Climate Wine Show, talks about the wine judging criteria.
I'm one of the judges at the International Cool Climate Wine Show, obviously expanding this into an international wine show. And also next year we're looking at Spanish and French wines participating, but they must be from a certain latitude and longitude so that they meet the international cool climate standards. The criteria for all these wines is finesse, style, and true to its character. And this show has actually shown some absolutely superb wines of this style. And the judging today, and also judging for the not only the golds, but the top wines, it was extremely difficult from all the 16-odd judges that were involved in it today.
Mornington Peninsula winemakers and vignerons are excellent at blending their wines.
The blends that are coming out now are basically been from the Spanish, Italian and a little bit of the French, but more so the vignerons and also the winemakers have been in the areas of some of the Tempranillos, the Sangioveses and even the Touriga, and there's some interesting wines coming out that are being grown here and are actually getting some recognition.
The Mornington Peninsula Vineyards took out some prestigious awards, totaling 7. The results are Best Red Wine at Show, Best Mornington Peninsula Red Wine and Best Pinot Noir 2013 was awarded to Tux Ridge Estate for their Buckle Pinot Noir. Best Mornington Peninsula Wine, LG Park Estate for their Family Reserve Chardonnay. Best Pinot Noir for 2014, Red Hill Estate for their Single Vineyard Pinot Noir. Best Pinot Gris, Foxy's Hangout. Best Rosé, Bitten Estate. Sometimes we don't realise how lucky we are living on the peninsula, where some of the best wines in the world continue to reach new heights. Multiple sclerosis is a chronic disease that attacks the central nervous system. It's estimated over 23,000 people in Australia live with MS, with an additional 1,000 diagnosed every year. Over the weekend, a fundraiser called the Scarlet Cup was held at the Mornington Race Club to raise funds for MS Research Australia. TV personality Brodie Harper was MC. She had this to say about the stigma attached to MS.
I'd like to see the stigma change, but then at the same time it's quite difficult. I think in order to lose the stigma of the disease and, say, for example, employment and businesses not being fearful of employing people with MS, need to understand that they're just as capable as everyone else. But at the same time, in order to raise funds, you need to make people aware of the worst case scenario, which is out there too. So it's a double-edged sword, I think, in doing the two. But I'd always like to see more help, and I'd like to see more research done. I think there's a lot of charities that are given a lot of publicity and given a lot of funds, and I think it's about time that some of that goes towards MS.
A Melbourne Uni researcher for MS Research Australia believes we are getting closer to finding a cure for MS.
So my name is Jerome Stahl, and I'm a medical researcher at both the Florey Institute of Neuroscience and Mental Health and the University of Melbourne. Finding a cure for MS is difficult, and we split it up into three major areas. One is the cure. How do we prevent it? How do we stop people from actually getting MS? Now, the ideas and the way to find the cure for it may lie in our genes, and it's very difficult. We got the treatments too. When an MS patient comes to us with a problem, we have to figure a way to treat them. And there's been a tremendous amount of technology looking at how we stop attacks, MS attacks. But it's really the third part that is where I've been working in. And it's how do we recover function after an MS attack? And this is really the type of cure that we are looking at, and we're moving tremendously closer as we start to understand the mechanisms that underlie the disease. Before we can treat, before we can cure, we have to understand the mechanisms of the disease.
Now, we have an election coming up. Are there any promises that the government has made to help with the research of the MS?
Well, it's been very tough for medical researchers over the past 10 to 15 years. The government has promised, as part of its Medical Research Future Fund, to help fund medical research. However, these are very uncertain days. We're unclear on where the money is going to go, except that both parties are suggesting that they would put more money into what we would say is more clinically relevant treatments. As medical research fellows, we're just very interested in continuing and increasing our stance in finding cures for MS, as well as all types of medical research. So from both parties, the promise is there, but it's often what happens afterwards that's important. We don't have any guaranteed government funding, so support from MS Research Australia and from different groups is fundamental in keeping scientists researching and finding a goal to MS cure.
Many volunteers at MS Australia are involved at all levels to help make communities aware of the disease.
My name's Trish Mifsud, and I coordinate the MS Ambassador Program for MS Limited. I've been living with MS since I was 19, so that's approximately 30 years. The role of an ambassador is to public speak, share their own personal story with the community, and be involved in events and projects run by MS Limited.
My name's Sandra Walker, I'm the General Manager of Services at MS. Our social support program is a really innovative program for people who actually need to have time out from home, enjoy social companionship, learn some new skills. We have over 110 people in the program across 10 sites in Melbourne. They come, particularly of interest is the art program, and we've had the most delightful outcomes from that program. So our social program is particularly supported by people of an older age group who didn't have the advantage of research or the new treatments that are available today. Within my own team at work, I have 7 staff within my own team who have MS.
The Phantom Race Call for the Scarlet Cup included a horse named Taking Care of Business, which is the name of a program on RPPFM presented by Jackie Mitchell. Have a listen to what auctioneer on the day, Annette Sanfilippo, said to get the highest bid on the day for Taking Care of Business. And as luck would have it, Taking Care of Business came first place. Thank you to Jackie for lending out the name of her RPPFM program. The day was a success with a crowd of over 150 attending. This from the organiser, Donna Bradley Robinson, to wrap it up.
Everybody's shown their support for the charity by wearing a touch of red, which is our colour for multiple sclerosis. So that's been a fantastic way of people expressing how they can actually show, you know, their support for this charity. And I'm very, very grateful. I'm extremely excited about it. I'm so happy that people can support MS the way that they have today.
The Scarlet Cup raised $12,300 on the day. Deborah Maher reporting there. Hope you've enjoyed this week's Eye on the Peninsula. If you have any news on the street you want to share with our team, please contact RPPFM on 5975 1234. Next week, Eye on the Peninsula will again bring you up to date with issues that matter to you. We hope you can tune in next Tuesday at noon on 98.7 FM or 98.3 FM in Frankston. You can live stream from our website, rpfm.com.au, and download the RPPFM app. If you miss any Eye on the Peninsula programs, podcasts are available on our website, and check out the Eye on the Peninsula Facebook page. Thank you to Deborah Maher, executive producer and reporter of Eye on the Peninsula, and Kevin Wilcox, our news researcher. I'm Piers Cunningham. Thanks for your company.